Hello there. My name is Cedric Richardson, and welcome to the Illinois Audio Reader. In this part one, I'll be bringing you news and articles from the Decatur Herald and Review. The Illinois Graduated Tax Amendment explained. One of the major questions Illinois voters will answer on November 3rd will be on the ballot statewide, whether to amend the state's constitution to allow for graduated rate income tax. Strictly speaking, the amendment removes a provision from the Illinois Constitution that requires any income tax to be levied at a flat rate on any level of income. The current rate is 4.95%. Passage of the amendment would allow lawmakers to apply different tax rates on varying levels of income. Of the 42 states that have an income tax, 32 and Washington, D.C. have a graduated rate structure, while Illinois is one of nine that impose a flat tax. While the amendment itself does not set any tax rates, legislation already passed by lawmakers and signed by the governor would take effect in January if the amendment passes. The rates created by that legislation would apply to six tax brackets, ranging from 4.75% on income up to $10,000 to 7.99% on all income for individual filers making more than $750,000. Here's a look at the amendment, the accompanying rate legislation, some of the arguments being made, and who is funding the advertising campaigns for and against it. The amendment. The General Assembly shall provide by law for the rate or rates of any tax on or measured by income imposed by the state. In any such imposed upon corporations, the highest rate shall not exceed the highest rate imposed on individuals by more than a ratio of 8 to 5. That would replace the current language, which states, a tax on or measured by income tax be at a non-graduated rate. At any one time, there may be no more than one such tax imposed by the state for state purposes on individuals and one such tax so imposed on corporations. In any such tax imposed upon corporations, the rate shall not exceed the rate imposed on individuals by more than a ratio of 8 to 5. On the ballot, voters will see the question worded as follows. The proposed amendment grants the state authority to impose higher income tax rates on higher income levels, which is how the federal government and a majority of other states do it. The amendment would remove the portion of the revenue article of the Illinois Constitution that is sometimes referred to as the flat tax, that requires all taxes on income be at the same rate. The amendment does not itself change tax rates. It gives the state the ability to impose higher tax rates on those with higher income levels and lower income tax rates on those with middle or lower income levels. You are asked to decide whether the proposed amendment should become a part of the Illinois Constitution. They'll be able to vote yes or no, and the amendment has two paths to passage. If it receives 60% of the vote from those voting on the question, it passes. But if it fails to reach the 60% threshold for those voting on the question, but still musters yes votes from more than half of those voting in the election, it would still pass. The measure also raises the corporate tax rate to 7.99% from 7%, and does not change the corporate property replacement tax of 1.5 to 2.5%, which already exists in current law. Looking over to educational news, Decatur Board has voted against a $30,000 bonus for the assistant superintendent. After listening to the 28 public comments and a lengthy discussion, the Decatur Board of Education on Tuesday rejected a $30,000 bonus for Jeff Dace, the assistant superintendent for teaching and learning. No board members attended the meeting in person, instead attending virtually through Zoom. Public comments, which were placed to the end of the board's agendas early in the pandemic, were moved back to the beginning of the meeting. This will be the agenda order going forward, so input can be heard prior to votes, said Board President Beth Nolan. During the board's discussion, member Courtney Carson asked for an explanation of the rationale behind the bonus for Dace, and though Superintendent Paul Fergo had given an explanation for how bonuses are calculated for principals, he did not provide one for Dace's bonus. In the end, the board voted unanimously against the bonus. Most of the teachers that spoke during the meeting mentioned their difficulty at working with Dace, the teacher shortage in the district that they blame on the toxic culture, and a need for support from central administration during a difficult time of the COVID-19 pandemic. I know some of you on the board, and I think you're good people, said Sam Mills, a teacher at Eisenhower High School. You ran for the board with good intentions. I'm sure you think the decisions you make, you're doing with best intentions. However, he added, education is not a business, and bonuses don't motivate educators. He then quoted Dace's book, Rise Above, just like with the students, unfortunately, sometimes you have to make an example of one, two, or some for everyone else to take you seriously. We need to move forward, but right now, the way things are going, this board and this administration are hindering that by being punitive, by creating a toxic culture for teaching and learning, he said. Jeannie Norman, president of the Decatur branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, asked the board if the reaction to the bonus could have risen from racism. Dace is black. The African-American administrator has been thrown under the bus before. You, as a board, have voted on the bonus, crucified in public because the superintendent, who is making over $200,000, has been publicly silent over a matter that is his recommendation, she said, referring to Superintendent Paul Frigo. When will the superintendent be held accountable? Several of the teachers referred to the teacher shortage in Decatur schools and the high number of vacant positions held by long-term substitutes. Others referred to the teachers recently reprimanded for not following grading standards on the first quarter reports recently distributed. With the pandemic underway and the difficulties of teaching remotely, said teacher Ron Leiberger, administration and teachers should be working together instead of at odds. If you believe that we are taking a back seat to our children's education, you are so wrong, said Holly Peckert. Maybe you should use that $30,000 to fund these teachers in the driving seat. Dace joined the district in April 2019 with a 3-year contract through 2022 that was extended to 2025 earlier this year over the objections of the Decatur Education Association. Chrissy Petit, president of the DEA, said the association gave Dace a failing grade for his performance. In January, Petit said the union has had a collaborative relationship with the school district for years, but since Days arrived, it has been replaced with one of distrust, rancor, and frankly, a downturn in student performance from scores in the fall to scores in the winter. His salary of $156,715 was not changed as a result of the contract extension, but a provision allows the board to review wages at the start of each school year. Prior to coming to Decatur, Days worked in Chicago Public Schools for 17 years, including serving as chief of schools, overseeing 30 elementary schools and 5 high schools. After the meeting, Days said he believes that if people took the time to get to know him, they'd find they could talk to him and work things out. With less than 2 years on the job so far, he said, he is still getting to know the people he works with. I'll show up tomorrow and do the job I've been doing, he said. Feeling the heat. It took just 2 minutes for the mock-up of a dorm room to go from a few flickers of flame to a roaring fire, with smoke billowing from the 8-foot structure in a parking lot at Eureka College on Tuesday. Just as quickly, firefighters from the Eureka Goodfield Fire Protection District put the fire out. Now the real work began. The fire was set so students in criminal justice professor William Lally's crime scene management class get hands-on experience in arson investigation. The lecture is one thing, but the individuals actually will not discover what challenges may be part of this until they're actually physically doing it, said Lally. So the only way that you can do that is to have a structure that is of somewhat comparable size to, say, a typical dorm room and set it on fire. Among the challenges students had to figure out was how to get good pictures in a dark room with lingering smoke. Abby Swope of Canton, a junior in criminal justice, said, "It's very interesting to actually see the fire, then investigate it yourself." Junior John Bozarth, a criminal justice major from Farmer City, said, "I learned how to look for evidence and learned what to look for. Most of us plan to go into law enforcement, so this is valuable." This was the fourth time Lally has used a room built by theater students as part of the arson portion of one of his classes. "I can't do any of this stuff without the theater department's help. They provide the furniture. The students build the mock scenes for me. Without that collaboration between the two departments, I could not do the programs that are unique to the Eureka Criminal Justice Program," he said. Marty Lynch, associate professor of theater, was glad to have his theater production students build the room for Lally's class. "That's especially in a year when his students aren't building stage sets because of performances being canceled because of the COVID-19 pandemic. We got to do things we don't usually get to do, using real-world techniques," said Lynch, as he watched the students' work go up in smoke. "Stage sets need to be light and inexpensive, but to properly and safely simulate an arson fire, the room Lynch's students built had to be sturdy and durable," he explained. The collaboration went beyond the campus boundaries. Firefighters from the Eureka Goodfield Fire Protection District were on hand to put out the fire and provide additional help if needed. Fortunately, thanks to overnight rain and ongoing drizzle, there was little danger of the fire spreading from the parking lot. "We all work together," said Eureka Goodfield Fire Chief Craig Neal. It's a way to give back to the community. Neil explained arson investigation techniques, shared his experiences, and answered questions from the students. I like teaching the kids, especially kids who want to be here and want to learn, said Neil. Although most of the students are planning to go into law enforcement, Neil hopes a few might also be inspired to join the fire service. A Decatur man has been sent to prison for a 4-year-old's death and also a wounding case. Bryant A. L. Lowe was sentenced to 4 years in prison for accidentally shooting one man to death and deliberately shooting and wounding another in separate crimes committed 11 days apart when he was 17 years old. Given the severity of the unrelated offenses, Lowe, now turned 18, has been charged as an adult in both by the prosecutors. He was sentenced October 14th in Macon County Circuit Court, receiving 4 years in the death case after pleading in involuntary manslaughter. He was also sentenced to 3 years in prison in the wounding case, but that sentence was ordered to run concurrently with the manslaughter sentence, effectively adding up to a total of 4 years on both. A charge of reckless discharge of a firearm, endangering life, originally filed in addition to the involuntary manslaughter charge, was dismissed at the sentencing. A sworn Decatur police affidavit said investigations had linked Lowe to the death of 21-year-old Jason A. Godbread after he had been shot on December 5, 2019, in a room of the Decatur Inn and later died from his injuries. Lowe was described as messing around with a firearm in the hotel room when the weapon suddenly discharged, fatally wounding Godbread. In the wounding case, 11 days later, police reports said Lowe opened fire with a rifle from a vehicle December 16, 2019, in the 3900 block of North Water Street, hitting a male victim in the abdomen. Lowe was described as being angry after the victim had earlier bought cannabis from him with $260 in cash that proved to be fake. Given evidence at an earlier hearing, Detective Eric Matthews said Lowe had been driving around in a car until he spotted the victim, and he then shot him through an open car window. But when the case came up for sentencing, original charges of attempted murder and aggravated battery with a firearm were dismissed. In a plea deal negotiated with Lowe's defense attorney, Stephen Willoughby, Lowe instead pleaded guilty to a new charge of reckless discharge of a firearm endangering life. Commenting on the case Tuesday, Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott said prosecutors were hampered by witnesses he described as unreliable and uncooperative with us. A suspended Decatur school guard has been arrested with drugs and a gun, according to police. A Decatur man who police said was wanted was arrested with drugs and cash. He told them that he earned the money working as a security guard for Decatur Public Schools. The Decatur School District confirmed Tuesday that the 24-year-old man had been employed as a guard, but was currently on paid suspension, and he is currently not permitted on school property during his suspension, said school district spokeswoman Denise Swarthout. The man was placed on suspension after he was charged earlier this year with being a felon in possession of a weapon. A sworn Decatur Public Police affidavit said he had failed to appear in court for hearings related to that charge, and members of the police community action team tracked him to a home in the 1200 block of East Sedgwick Street Friday evening. Officers said they saw him flee from the back of the house as officers arrived wearing badges and clearly marked uniforms. Detective Tim Whitmer said police gave chase as the man ignored yelled commands to stop, and they caught up with him in the 1100 block of East Johns Avenue. Whitmer said police found a 9mm handgun discarded along the man's flight path and 42 grams or 1.4 ounces of cannabis in his pockets. Officers also located a substantial amount of U.S. currency on his person, indicative of narcotics sales. Later, under questioning, Whitmer said the man told detectives he had fled because he knew there was a warrant out for his arrest and he could not afford to post bond. He also admitted to possessing cannabis, said Whitmer. He stated that the currency came from his paycheck as Decatur Public Schools security guard. The man was booked on preliminary charges of unlawful possession of cannabis with intent to deliver. Armed violence and being a felon in possession of a weapon all are preliminary charges and are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. Whitmer said a check of the man's criminal record also shows a conviction from 2017 after he pleaded guilty to aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Macon County Circuit Court records show he was sentenced to 24 months on probation. And now the obituaries for today. Lizetta J. Ferguson. Lizetta J. Ferguson, 94, of Sullivan, passed away at 5:45 p.m. Sunday, October 25th, 2020, in Eastview Terrace in Sullivan. Celebration of Life services will be at 11 a.m. Thursday at the Reed Funeral Home in Sullivan. Visitation will be 1 hour before the service, and the burial will be in Marylebone Township Cemetery in Bethany. Memorials are suggested to the Alzheimer's Association or the Moultrie County Historical Society. Online condolences may be sent to the family at reedfuneralhome.net. Terry Max Jaro, 87 years old, of Decatur, passed away Saturday, October 24th, 2020, in his home, surrounded by his loving family. Honoring Terry J. Roll's wishes, cremation services will be provided by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 2091 North Oakland Avenue in Decatur, Illinois. No services are planned at this time. Please view the online obituary, send condolences, and share memories at GracelandFairlawn.com. Barbara Jean Allison Lamb, 90, of Shelbyville, passed away peacefully on Monday, October 26, 2020. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, October 31st, 2020, at Glenwood Cemetery in Shelbyville, Illinois. Howe and Yaki Funeral Home in Shelbyville is in charge of the arrangements. Memorials may be given to the American Cancer Association and mailed to Howe and Yaki Funeral Home at 415 North Broadway in Shelbyville, Illinois. Joan Pirtle, Joan Pirtle, 85, of Decatur, passed away Saturday, October 24th, 2020, in her home. Funeral services to celebrate the life of Joan Pirtle will be 11 a.m. Friday, October 30th, 2020, at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Friday before the service at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Second Church of God at 2670 East Division Street in Decatur, Illinois, 62526, or plant a tree or bush in memory of Joan. The family of Joan Pirtle is being served by Moran and Goble Funeral Home, located at 2801 North Monroe Street in Decatur, Illinois. Azalee Berner, 91, of Decatur, passed away peacefully Friday, October 23rd, 2020, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A private family memorial service will be held at Central Christian Church. Private family graveside services will be held at a later date. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Homes in Decatur is assisting the family. In lieu of flowers, memorials in Azalee's honor may be made to Central Christian Church at 650 West William Street in Decatur, Illinois, 62522. And that is the obituaries for today. A Shelbyville artist wins an award at an art show. The annual October National 2020 juried show, brought to the public by Gallery 510 in Decatur and held at the Ann Lloyd Gallery in the Madden Arts Center, is open to the public during this month. Carol Kessler of Shelbyville was one of over 40 artists who were juried into the show, judged by Jamie Katoa, art faculty with Spoon River College in Canton, Illinois. With this being a national show, artists from Hawaii to New York and Wisconsin to Texas submitted entries, from which the final picks consisted of 43 pieces. One of the 10 awards was Carol's piece titled Province Shore with Boats, painted in oil from a photo she took in 2015 while on a trip to the Provence area of France with her sister. The judge's comments on this awarded piece stated, "Both the S-shaped composition and the technique stood out to me in this piece. The warm vibrancy from the red and oranges underneath the other colors adds so much. The surface texture also really stood out to me." Carol works from her studio at Flourishes Gallery and Studios in Shelbyville, mostly in oil paint sticks and pastel. And finally, a Forsyth family is to appear in a Today Show Halloween costume contest. A local family is all abuzz about their scheduled appearance Wednesday on NBC's Today Show. Ashley and Samuel Kirby from Forsyth, along with their 11-month-old son, Maverick, are among the day's four competitors taking part in the show's costume contest. They will appear dressed as a beekeeper, a queen bee, and our son is a busy bee, Ashley Kirby said. Each day of the week, the Halloween show producers will present four families from around the country to show off their costumes and tell their stories. Viewers are encouraged to vote for their favorite costume, To vote for the Kirby family, visit thetodayshow.com. And with that, thank you for joining me here on the Illinois Audio Radio.